welcome. You're on air with Ella, where we share simple strategies and tips from people who are doing something better than we are. Whether it's wellness or relationships to just living better and with more energy, or changing your mindset to accomplish more in your own life and succeeding however you define it. This is where we share the best of what we're learning from the experts, and we're learning more every day. Live better, start now. Let's go. Hey, you're on air with Ella, and it is my pleasure to welcome Jill Sirianni to the show. Hey, Jill, how are you?
Hi, Ella. I'm doing so well. Thanks for having me.
Tell us all your handle. Like, what's your code name, Jill? We need to understand who you are right off the bat. Like,
what do I go by? Who am I in the night undercover? My name's Jill. I'm the co-host of the Frugal Friends podcast. And by day, I am working in the mental health field. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And woven throughout is the podcast where we talk about financial health, making it attainable for women.
You're a practitioner, you're a clinician. How on earth did you get into this world where you're helping people with their own financial empowerment?
A lot of it had to do with meeting my good friend and now co-host, Jen Smith. I had listened to your episode about how to make friends in adulthood, and I feel as though this is one of those experiences of really just connecting with somebody and then learning that we have mutual interests. And for the two of us, as far as going from a background of social work into having a podcast around personal finance, it really was in part having to do with this friendship where she brought something to the table that I lacked and vice versa, and just enjoying these conversations together, realizing that there's a gap out there. There are not many women talking about how to do finances. Now there is, which is fantastic. Usually a kind of gatekept type of arena and field, but then not many people who are kind of breaking it down in an attainable way either. It really felt as though you had to understand all of this lingo to be good with your own money. And the reality is no, you don't. You can learn and you can find friends along the way to learn. So that was really exciting for the both of us to realize what we found in each other and wanting to create an even larger community around that. And I think one of the things that I saw, even beyond the gap in what existed in the podcast realm, is the connection that our finances have with our entire personhood, with mental health. And so pairing those two was a journey for me of recognizing what my mental, emotional, relational health had to do with my financial health, and then being able to share that with others and have my own integrated self and help others find their congruent in alignment self. So that was a little bit of the journey. We, of course, just began talking about finances together because we were both in our own debt payoff journeys. Because I know talking about finances is not typically what you do with your friends, but because we were in similar circumstances and kind of connected on this thing, it flourished into what is now a podcast on personal finance.
That's fantastic. And as you said, there is a clear need for this. And we were chit-chatting when we first spoke. And I said, you know, you're really connecting the dots between making something accessible and interesting and honestly, like almost lighthearted relating to a topic that can be really heavy for some people. And I have to say a special shout out right now to my devoted listeners who I love so much, who saw the title of this episode and they're like, nah. because there are certain areas of our life where it just triggers too much of something in us, or it's just a general discomfort and we just avoid. It can be perceived as boring or it can be perceived as threatening. And those are two of the most common reactions that I see. And I'll be honest with you, Jill, genuine excitement is not one of the top three responses to when we're like, hey, let's talk about our personal finances. Would you please share a little bit about your story? You've been very open with the fact that you came back, bounced back from serious debt. What did that look like in your life? What was that like for you?
When I first graduated with my undergrad degree in social work and got a job, I was making $24,000 a year. And while that was maybe 13 years ago, that was still not a lot of money.
Yeah, that was 13 years ago. That wasn't 130 years ago.
Still absurd at the time. But here I am, just bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, being excited that I have a job in the field that I just got a degree in. And really, maybe a bit of this bleeding heart mentality. I'm a social worker and I'm going to help. It was a difficult setting that I was in. It was a residential facility for youth. So there really was a lot of purpose, and I felt genuine need that we were responding to there. All that to say, my debt was about $30,000 of student loan debt, which was more than I made in a year. And I know even just with that metric, that's a lot of people's stories. Their student loan debt is more than they make in a year. I hope to goodness all of your listeners are making more than $24,000 a year. But that felt really overwhelming to me. And I felt the weight of that. I am not a type of person who can ignore that reality, feels just good about the minimum payment for the rest of their lives. And so I was married at the time. I got married very young. He's wonderful. We're still married now. Glad for that. Also, don't recommend that for everybody. And we really wanted to think through, how do we get out of this debt as soon as possible? And it might surprise some people that I see debt as neutral. I know there's a lot of people out there who think debt is evil, all debt is super bad. And while I don't want debt, I desire to live a debt-free life. My journey towards becoming debt-free did include taking on even more debt. So we had to get a truck loan out for my husband to be able to start a construction business. And so all of it ended up adding up to, over the span of, it took us 7 years to pay off $58,000 of debt. And again, most of that was my student loan debt, but we had accumulated some other things as intentional decisions towards debt freedom and becoming even better with our finances and getting after our goals. And so for us, one of the ways that we did that was looking at the really heavy hitters of our finances. I know a lot of people love to talk about, stop getting the cappuccino, and that's going to really make a big difference in your financial landscape. And sure, if you don't want to be getting cappuccinos every day, fine, but that's not actually going to be what makes the big differences in our finances and in our spending and in our budgeting. So we were looking at housing, transportation, food, again, the bills, the heavy hitters. And so what we ended up doing was living in an RV in order to cut down our living expenses and be able to pay off debt faster. In the midst of that, we also renovated RVs a couple of times, made a profit on the sale of those RVs, and were able to become debt free. The sale of one RV ended up being a down payment on a house. And so that's kind of my journey through debt freedom. A lot has been learned along the way. My view of debt, my view of finances has shifted, as I would hope that it would. But I think becoming better and better at that and being willing to kind of think outside the box and then turn around and help others think outside the box and not feel the guilt and shame around debt or spending or even saving, but really find some confidence and empowerment in how we approach our money and get after the things that we actually want, not necessarily the things that society is telling us we should want.
I just think it's incredibly important, particularly that women have these conversations. In general, if I may speak with a very broad brush, I am a very big fan of women earning when they can. Yeah. There's an empowerment that comes when you are generating and producing. There is freedom and flexibility and autonomy when you are generating. But you know what? For the many, many people who are earning or not earning, I just hope that if they're in a partnership, that they are engaged, because too many people step out of the process if they are not the major earner in their family, in their household. Just because you're not earning does not mean you are not contributing, and it absolutely does not mean you should not be engaged.
Yes. It's also interesting that, yes, there are many, particularly women in a household setting, who might acquiesce certain responsibilities financially to their partner. But statistics show that women are the ones managing household finances. There can be a tension there, and it might be that women are managing the day-to-day spending, and maybe if it's a traditional setup, the men are handling maybe some of the investments and the bigger financial decisions. But what we then find is that, statistically speaking, women live longer than men. And so if we don't know what we're doing and we're only entrusting our spouse to be handling that, it does not go that well when it comes time to that. For most of us, if we're a woman, we will at some point be 100% responsible for all of the financial decisions that are happening, and better to start now. And that's not necessarily a dig at the men in our lives. It might be that we've acquiesced those things, but giving ourselves permission to learn and grow. I think for me, at least, I've had an experience of, I don't get it and I don't like not knowing. So I'll just ignore it, and society lets me ignore it. And learning about investing is just far too big of an animal, so I'm not going to do it. With the alternative being, what if I just dip my toes in this? What if I just talk with a trusted friend? What if I listen to a podcast or read a book where they're talking about this? And then I come to find out it's not this big, scary monster in a corner, and it's actually not that hard to understand. And grow and grow and grow in confidence. Like, we don't have to be a CPA by the end of it. We can just learn the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and become really confident about the decisions that we're making for our households, for ourselves, for kids, for spouse, for whoever, but mostly ourselves. If we're going to be the ones handling finances completely at some point in time, might as well do it now.
I think it's really important that you got that on the table, and I appreciate that so much. And plenty of people listening earn, and yet they know what's coming in the door, and they're not necessarily hugely engaged with what's going out the door. And I'm going to be honest with you, Jill, the word budget is a very heavy, dull thud. It lands that way with so many people. So
I know.
I don't want to talk about how to do a budget. I'm going to leave that to the Frugal Friends podcast. But what I really want to do is do what we do best, which is get into some tips from you doing what you do best, to talk about some of the best ways that we can do that, so people can take some tools home with them today, if that makes sense.
I love it. I really love demystifying, stigmatizing, making things fun. So yes, let's put the B word out the door. And one of the ways that we like to reframe even that concept is a spending plan, which does sound so much better. And so the thing about spending is, it's a skill, and not all of us are, most of us actually are not born knowing how to do this well. How we were raised, our thoughts about money, our experiences with money all play into how we spend. And here's the thing about spending too. We spend things other than money. We all spend our emotional energy daily, mental energy, relational energy, physical energy, financial energy, maybe in the form of money, on a daily basis. And so our ability to know how to steward our resources well, to spend well, especially our limited resources, which again goes beyond money. It is our time, our relationships, all of the things that I just mentioned, they all intersect. As we become better with spending our relational energy well, knowing what depletes us and what's life-giving, that will at its core help us become better financial spenders. We will be better at knowing how to say yes and no to money decisions when we can know ourselves better. So ultimately, we can talk about tips and tricks related to money and hardly even use the word money, because it is so connected to many other aspects of how we approach life, knowing ourselves, setting boundaries. And boundaries are just demarcating the areas in which we can play. Like, where is there room to play and live a full life without concern at all of being hit by a car?
First of all, I love the idea of having a spending plan instead of a budget. Budget feels like restraint, and spending plan feels like something we're just doing with intention, which is something we're big fans of here. And the other thing, I mean, here's an analogy. if you're trying to tighten up your nutrition or, you know, you want to feel a bit better and you're looking to sort of dial it in a little bit, you can certainly talk about restricting and not eating that and not consuming this type of thing and counting this and not counting that. That doesn't work for me.
No, it doesn't work for most people. Yeah. That's why there's a term for it, yo-yo dieting, and it doesn't work very well.
And then when you focus on what you do want in a day, when you look at what you want to put in your body in a day, what you do want to consume, it's much more powerful and empowering to be like, well, what do I want to intentionally fill my day with? The second connection that I made when you were sharing that was that actually requires that you know what your priorities are. And that's another thing that we like to talk about here, no matter what the arena we're playing in. We happen to be talking about money and financial management. No matter which part of the life wheel we're focused on, Jill, knowing what are your priorities, another word you might use is values, knowing what those are can then drive the intentions that you set. So I appreciate you so much sharing that this isn't just about being as tight as we possibly can be, but it's, again, just about living with intention.
Yeah, and I think so much of this has to do with just curiosity with ourselves and considering what actually matters to me. What do I value? Chances are it's different from your friends. It may even be different from your spouse. It could be different from the version of you 5 years ago. One of the things we additionally talk about, not just a spending plan, but a spending plan that's based around values. So a values-based spending plan where we can feel really good about what we are putting our resource of money towards. Of course, we've got the classic house and bills and all of these things, but still there's an alignment of values that happens there. And maybe sometimes a reevaluation of, okay, if I'm not pleased with what I'm spending on my mortgage, then do I want to reevaluate where I'm even living or the type of place I'm living in? That's an extreme example. But, you know, once we're beyond just the set expenses and we're looking at some of the discretionary expenses, so often I can commiserate with you, Ella. We just have the money just kind of goes and I don't really know where it went, but here we are. And really moving towards spending in a way that, again, is guilt-free, shame-free, and feels very much aligned with the things that we say matters, which begins with knowing what matters and not just spending on the Instagram ad that was just given to us or the fact that, I don't know, this thing's a deal on Amazon, so might as well just one click buy it. And then we end up with a ton of stuff and like not much to show for it, or it only 50% aligns with our values.
My priorities are so evident in my spending plan. And my spending plan is a little bit, probably not as formal as you would like it to be, but I am only buying cars that I can pay for with cash, meaning I'm not taking a car loan. My shoes do not impress anybody. I will never have a collection of purses that will make it on Instagram. None of those are in alignment with my values or my interests, quite frankly. Now, I say all of that to say to you, I spend a sick amount of money on health, on longevity, on doing things that make me feel good, on doing triathlon and traveling for a weekend to do that. Like, my money isn't sitting under a mattress. It's going out into the world, but I am spending it on the things that light me up because I have a very clear idea that I want experiences and I want vitality. And that's where like a lot of my disposable income goes, unapologetically, Jill.
What more could you ask for? Because
better shoes.
I can relate to so much of what you're saying. Going through this process for me, some of my core values that I've identified are beauty, generosity, and community. So I will spend unashamedly in those categories and say no ruthlessly to the luxury vehicles, the designer handbags. Like, I don't have a value for them. I don't care about it. I'm not, so there's no deprivation for me. I'm ruthlessly saying no, but not out of this stringent, restrictive, depriving thing. It's just because my yes is going somewhere way better that I actually really enjoy.
Yes. And that's whatever lights you up, you yeah. who's joining this conversation with us. So if it is in fact shoes and handbags for you, my God, run with it. Like whatever works for you. My only point is to always pursue with intention. Our whole goal here, Jill, is not to live on autopilot yes. and then be surprised by the outcomes.
Yeah. And within capacity, I'm never going to encourage someone to go into credit card debt for their values. Like finding a way to be able to spend on what you value within your capacities.
Cosign. Yes. I, that doesn't go without saying. So I'm glad you said it. Okay. Yes. Can we talk about Amazon? Because here I am and I'm like, you know, it's a value to me, health and longevity. And yet at the same time, it is so easy to spend money so quickly now. What tips yeah. do you have for people who are sort of one-click buying on the regular?
Really, I think what we're talking about here is impulsive spending and impulsive purchases. And so certainly there's a whole lot that can be said about this, but I would be remiss to not highlight again, we are going to significantly decrease our impulse spending if we have a clear understanding of ourselves, the things that we want out of life, where we want our money to go. It's going to be much easier to say no to these things that are ancillary, that actually don't matter, when we're then also able to say yes and get the things that do matter. But then just as far as some of these hacks go, you know, we can certainly be setting up some barriers for ourselves. If there are particular websites that we just mindlessly find ourselves on, plenty of add-ons for Chrome or whatever your search engine is that you use. Sometimes when we are trying to form new habits, new patterns of behavior, then we do need some level of interruption. And so if that's you, putting an extension onto your internet browser that where you can tell it, what are the websites that you want a stopgap in between you and doing this thing? You can do that. And it will kind of just do a gut check of, do I really need to go on this website? Why am I doing this? Am I bored? Am I tired? Am I hungry? Am I feeling emotionally fatigued? Is there something that I could do? Because we need to replace that behavior with something. Is there something that I can do that would actually care for me better in this moment than my mindlessly scrolling and potentially buying something that is only going to partially fulfill my needs and values right now. Other things that we can be trying is, okay, we've bypassed that barrier and now we're scrolling, is to put your items on freeze. So there's a couple of ways that we can do that. We can delete all of our saved credit card information. That's just another barrier that we can bypass. But if it's not as easy as one click buying and now I got to go find my credit card because I don't have my number memorized, although some of you do, and like respect, but you're still going to have to type it in and that could be a barrier. And then allowing things to sit. There's even add-on extensions you can do to put things on ice for, you know, 10 days, 30 days where you're not able to make that purchase, or put it in your shopping cart. Practice your own kind of self-control. Even start small, give it 24 hours. Do you still want the thing once you've put some sleep in between you and clicking that button? So of course there's the impulsive nature of it, but then there's also some people who say, I want to stop buying specifically at Amazon because of all of the boxes and the emissions and how it's just not sustainable and it's not good for our environment. And that's beautiful too. And so in that regard, you know, buying secondhand, buying used through online sites or shopping local within your own community, I think these could be some really good alternatives to get the things that we need, but maybe in a way that feels like a better stewarding of our resources.
I love the tip about leaving things and just walking away from it for a little while. So if I find myself sort of late night falling in love with something that I saw on Instagram, and yes, I understand that I sound like I'm a 17-year-old girl, but it's good. Like they know how to hook you and they know how to be like, you'll literally never have body hair ever again if you buy this one thing. And I'm like, it's a miracle. And then if you just put it in the cart the next day, when you're not in the fog of the doom scroll, if you can look at it with a fresh pair of eyes, 88% of the time I'm able to just close the browser and just like literally never think about it again. Can we talk about subscriptions? Because that's another sneaky thing. And when we talk about spending intentionally, then subscriptions are sort of by definition, you know, not that.
Yes. I love to put investing and saving on autopilot, but putting spending on autopilot, we should second guess. Yeah. So I think it is good to do an audit of these things at least twice a year. You could be an overachiever and do it way more than that, monthly, quarterly, whatever you want. But I think oftentimes we don't even realize the things we're subscribed to. And when we go back through it and we look at our transactions and realize, oh, wait a second, I'm still getting that whatever and cutting that off. I think there could be some subscriptions that you value. You want that. That's totally fine. But I think it is worthwhile looking through, what am I actually subscribed to? Do I want to still be subscribed to this thing? And if not, cancel it. Get your money back in your own pocket. This is somewhat related to subscriptions, but I know a lot of times too, temptations can come just through the emails of, hey, sign up for this thing, get this thing, we've got this sale. And of course, if that's just a temptation you don't want, unsubscribe. That's a simple click of the button. But if it's a brand that you know you're going to be back for them, or when you're on the lookout for a specific thing and you want to know if they're having a deal, you still want them in your inbox, but you don't want it front face, there's a really awesome resource called Unroll Me, where it will compile all of your emails, your kind of like ad-based emails into one. And so if you want to look for a deal that a specific brand is having, all you have to do is open that one email and not be flooded with all of these temptations of spending.
Ooh, that's a good one. And I know there's also an app that you can use that will just quickly audit your active credit cards for recurring subscriptions. And so with a click of a button, it will not only identify them for you, but it will, in some cases, unsubscribe you or cancel that subscription nice. For you. Yes. So that's fantastic. Speaking of, can you send some of those browser extensions, some of the names of those browser extensions? And I'm going to add one more to the mix, and it's Honey. And you hear Honey advertised, and I think Capital One and other services have this, but I use Honey and have deleted the others. And that's just a browser extension. Again, all of this will be in the show notes. But if I am buying something online, if there's a promo code out in the ether anywhere, it will grab it for you and apply it. So I have saved hundreds of dollars with just that free extension. Jill, also, my tip with regard to subscriptions is, well, first of all, I do think that everyone should have access to their spending monthly and, you know, give it a look.
Yes.
I use QuickBooks for my businesses, and then I use Quicken personally. And of course, there are many free services. But Jill, when it comes to subscriptions, you know, I'll go through seasons where I have 7 active subscriptions, maybe 8, and they're all serving a purpose in my life. And that's fine. They're not inherently evil. They're just inherently automatic. That's my only point. I love taking a look at them seasonally, because I'll have a Netflix subscription, a Peloton subscription, and I need those when it's cold outside because I have less to do. I need to use the Peloton when it's cold outside. I'm watching Netflix when it's cold outside and dark at 4 p.m., you know, et cetera. And in the summer, like, you can't keep me in the house. So in the summer, I don't need a Peloton subscription. I'm not watching Netflix. I just look at them literally tied to the seasons and adjust accordingly. That's just a little life hack that has worked for me.
I love that tip. And again, you're highlighting the beauty of knowing yourself. You've obviously put in work to know the rhythms of your life, the things you enjoy in different seasons. And I think so often we won't cancel those things because we don't know about our rhythms and seasons. And so those are the types of things that are possible when we've done the work of curiosity with ourselves and what makes me tick, what's deprivation to me and what's life-giving. And I applaud all the tips that you're saying. And it has come with probably some hard work of knowing yourself.
Well, that is our goal here, Jill, is to just be intentional. Okay, before I let you go, Jill, what are just some like 3 things you wish everybody would at least consider or knew about when it comes to just being a bit more intentional about how they spend?
You've heard me say one of them already, and it's being curious with ourselves. And the reason I'm going to highlight this again is because, especially as it relates to finances, there can be so much guilt and shame wrapped up in it. And it's one of the reasons that maybe we might ignore it. We don't feel confident. Maybe we're not super proud of some of the decisions we've made in the past. Whatever the reason, I think it's a really beautiful place to start with curiosity and kind of getting at an understanding of values. From there, I wish that there were greater permission to be talking in community with people about these types of things. I think having trustworthy friends that we can have some of these vulnerable conversations is really vital. And so I know that that can be difficult, but maybe taking that first step with somebody who has already proven a safety and a reciprocity and a trustworthiness to be able to talk about, hey, here's some of the questions that I have, or this is something that I'm struggling with, or this is something that I'm doing really amazing at. And hey, what do you think about XYZ? Because we don't know what we don't know, and we're not going to grow much in this area of finance if we try and stay isolated. It doesn't happen in an isolated vacuum. And so finding some good, trustworthy friends to be able to talk about. And really, if we're going to get just like really tangible, I would encourage everybody, just as a place to start, is take 30 minutes and look back over your transactions. Over the last, I would recommend 90 days. So much happens month to month that 1 month over another may not give a really good snapshot. I think we need at least 30 days to see, what am I spending on? And do that with the curiosity that I've already described of, what does this say about me? Almost like a detective who you don't even know who it is that you're looking into, but just what am I going to find out about this woman as I go through these transactions? What does she enjoy? And then from there to say, does this money story reflect accurately about the things that I say I value? The things that I say I want to do? Are there surprises here? Are there victories here? Are there things that I would want to do differently? But either way, that's going to be a really good launching point to just look back over your transactions, get a handle on it. It's going to be a beautiful foundation for you to inform yourself on where do you want to go from there.
I have a fourth tip, and that is to jump over to the Frugal Friends podcast with Jill and her creative partner. And Jill, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ella. It's been a privilege.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed today's show and got something out of it that you can use. If you did and you want to learn more, just head over to onairella.com, where I put up links to all of the stuff that you did not need to write down today because I got you covered. There's no with. It's just onairella.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing the show. And thanks for inspiring me. You are quite simply awesome.